So here we are. It's like this. All of you, from what I know most of you fairly well, and you've been into practice a long time. So perhaps a kind of interesting long-term suggestion for your practice. So with Ajahn Pavro now is visiting us. He's a lovely man. He's been a monk for 14 years, and he lives in Thailand, but he's from Calgary, and he was a professor of Buddhist studies. Now he's a monk, so I have a nice time with him in the workshop. And he loves hand tools. And as I was saying, he was encouraging me to use like a hand plane. Now, hand plane is much more subtle than a thicknesser. A thicknesser has, you put a piece of wood in, and you get a flat board, which is not handcraft. Get stuff done, that's useful. But then to get that refinement, I thought, oh, that'll be interesting. So I thought maybe this year I'd spend more time developing hand tools. So maybe next year I'll have another story about whatever. But if I stick with it, then I'll probably have some skill with a plane. But I have to stick with it. I have to stay with my intention. And then I have to get past the, I'll just put it in the thicknesser. Or I have to sharpen the planes. And so it'll take focus, concentration, and intention. And so I'll have a chance to develop the craft. So the craft of the heart requires intention. And you do that many ways. So obviously the kind of day-by-day intention is to awaken the mind to the way things are. So you get that basic idea clear and profoundly integrated into your subconscious, or right deeply into your being, what that means. Because if you don't get that right, you might make good intentions, but it'll be coming from the desire to become or get rid of, and that won't work. It won't give you a good result. So that fundamental thing is right understanding, both in terms of doing, but also understanding, right understanding. So from the awakened mind, then the intentions can be towards cultivating the wholesome or abandoning the unwholesome. That's what we talk about, right effort. So sustaining the wholesome things that have already been developed, and then cultivating wholesome things that haven't been developed, and then abandoning unwholesome things that have arisen, and preventing unwholesome things that have not yet arisen from coming into consciousness. That's, if someone would to ask you, what's Buddhist practice? That would be one way of talking about it, right effort. So if I keep the five precepts, and someone at the office says, wow, we can take this Xerox paper, copying paper. Well, it would take a few reams, it doesn't matter, does it? It's government. No one will know. Yeah, let's take a few pens. Yeah, well, take a few. No. You're preventing the unwholesome from arising into consciousness. So those are obvious things. But perhaps on a kind of more long-term perspective in developing the mind, when there is this kind of understanding and doing of the awakened mind, then that is, you're in the stream of Dharma. You're no longer in the stream of self. So if I I'm fantasizing about, if I'm thinking about being in Thailand. So I have a retreat in Thailand in Mae Hong Son in December. So I've never been there. It's near the Burmese border. It sounds exotic. Da, 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 da. So I start, I'm meditating, and I start to think about Mae Hong Son, and I'm off that way. And then I realize it. So before I realize it, there's the story, and that's the stream of self, a me and mine. And then something interrupts it. You know, someone coughs, or my knee hurts, and there's a kind of realization, oh, thought is this way, right? So that's the stream of Dharma now. So from the stream of, when you're in the stream of Dharma, then you can make right effort. You can guide the mind in different ways. If I just react to that fantasy and then try to focus my mind onto the object, I shouldn't be thinking. I'm still in a stream of self, of self-making. I'm not really mindful. It might be good intention, but it's not going to work. So that's the idea of awakening to the way things are, to be in the stream of Dharma. And Dharma is the way things are. Anger feels this way. Crunching candy feels that way. So on. So, if there are, once there's in the stream of Dharma, then you can see that the moods of the mind with which we become preoccupied are varied in content, but actually fairly limited in type. In other words, I can be annoyed at in a myriad of ways, but annoyance is a type. Or I can be worried in a myriad of ways, but a worry is a type. So actually, perhaps the types of moods that one experiences aren't that many, but the objects of them are endless, aren't they? So to make a long-term project, let's say that I think, well, my mind tends to get preoccupied a lot with maybe like annoyance, aversion, criticism, cynicism, anger, rage. Right? So there's this kind of spectrum of mindsets, but they're all coming from basically some form of resistance or not wanting or aversion. And I notice that in myself. So then I can make it like the project of doing hand tools. Well, I think this year I'll do aversion. You know, I think I'll dedicate this year to just notice each instance of annoyance, aversion, anger, rage. What's less than annoyance? Anyway, you know, the whole spectrum. Huh? Irritation, say. Okay, from the most minuscule to the most extreme. But it's actually one type of mindset. And I think, yeah, okay, I'll make that my project, to awaken to each instance of that. Now, I'm not demanding that I be a nice guy, or that I not experience those things, or that I experience their opposite. You know, no. I'm not even saying, like, each time aversion arises, I will just love everyone. Forget it. Or that I will do some kind of compensatory practice. Each time I notice aversion, I will just spread metta to all sentient beings. That's very sentimental, good luck. But it won't work, right? But what will work if you awaken to that? That you can do. You can do that. But you have to make the intention, and you have to be kind of curious and see it as a worthwhile project. So if I think after 1 month of trying hand planing, this ridiculous idea, I'm back to my machines, fair enough, I'll never learn hand planing. If I feel that, you know, my aversions are quite justified and I am right, and then I'll go for it, right? But if I feel that, you know, this preoccupation with annoyance, aversion, irritation, anger, and rage actually prevent me from being available to silence, to peace, to stillness. And I am curious about these ideas in Buddhism about the unconditioned and so on. If I could just somehow figure out how not to be preoccupied in that area, I'd have a big piece of the puzzle sussed, right? And that's a kind of consideration which is very doable, and it's according to Dharma rather than it's not an ideal. If you say I'm never going to be angry, that's impossible. It's an ideal, and you'll feel guilty, so that won't work. So you make a kind of project. Okay, each time that arises, I'm going to awaken to it, and of course, then you just reinforce the intention to awaken to it. And if you have that clear, then each time it arises, now you say, oh, you know, now you're in the driver's seat, as it were. You're not just driven by the self-narratives, but you see anger as object, as dharma, as thing, rather than you being angry. And then from that, you'll figure it out yourself, actually. We're intelligent beings. You just got to give intuition, intelligence, a chance to kind of notice what's going on. And that's by making things conscious. I think from there, things naturally move in a way towards freedom, because we don't want to be free. If we have a stone in our shoe, we take the shoe off and we get the stone out. We do that. You know, we have that kind of intelligence. But if you do that, it becomes actually quite an interesting project, because you see, let's say there are so many iterations of this particular mood, and you'll be surprised by it. Rather than hating yourself for it, or doing the other, which sometimes people mistake mindfulness practice. They think that, well, if I just focus on the dishes and just the wetness of the water, and I don't let any mood in my mind, then I'll be enlightened. Mm-hmm. No, you just get the dishes done. Well, you'll probably break them. That's probably what happened. Because this isn't about control, this is about awakening, and then making choices which create the causes for peace. So if I'm washing the dishes, and I'm not just rushing to get them done, I've got a bit of time, and the mind is like moving in the direction of aversion, I can notice that. And then I can make a choice. Oh, there's aversion, but there's also wetness. Oh, there's aversion, there's also wetness. And I think one of the reasons we stay preoccupied with thought is that we want to fix things. You know, you get some aversion, and you start arguing yourself about the aversion. I really shouldn't feel that way. Yeah, but I mean, it's terrible. Yeah, but you know, I shouldn't. Yeah. And there's this looping discussion going on, and all the time there's just a preoccupation with that mood set, right? Just all the time. Whereas when you're washing the dishes and you're, oh, this is a mood of aversion, you can choose to, go to it and see what's the problem. But quite often it's not a problem, it's just a habit. And then you see, yeah, there's that, but I don't have to fix it. I don't have to get rid of it. I don't have to become a better person. All I need is to wash dishes. But that takes skill to see, oh, that's the mood, and there's the dishes. And then you see the wonderfulness of cessation. And you're kind of working there, and the mood's there, and in the past, I've got to fix it, I've got to do something, analyze it, think about it, justify it, blah, blah, blah. But it's all thought. Now you're choosing some physical activity, or whatever it be, and you're just doing that, and there's the mood, and then it ceases. And you haven't been preoccupied with it, you've been aware of it. So that's different, isn't it? What's the difference between being preoccupied with some negative emotion in a self-judging, analytical, justifying, blah, 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 blah way, and knowing it? It's different, isn't it? It's much, much different. So that's what the awakened mind is. So when we talk about stages of enlightenment, we talk about stream entry, and then we talk about once returner. And in the once returner section, it simply says what little there is in the text. It's the lessening of greed and aversion. That's all it says. And yet that's one of the kind of stages of holiness. Now in Theravada we make that a huge deal. Stream entry is it's made like rocket science that no one can realize it. So Theravada people have been arguing for 2,000 years about what it takes to do that. But no one kind of looks at the second one. And the second one is, it's just the lessening of greed and aversion. That's all it is, you know. And okay, so how does that work? Well, when I'm washing the dishes, and there's a witnessing of anger, and the non-involvement with it, it arises, it sustains itself, it ceases. To me, that's a lessening of anger. No? Doesn't seem like rocket science. No, it can't be that. It must be more than that, blah, 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 blah. And all the opinions came out, and the scholars came out, and they beat you up, and you feel, more. But really, is it that, you know, is it that far away? I don't think so. So what does the, like entering into the stream of Dharma, what does that mean? Doesn't that not just mean knowing that that which has the nature to arise is the nature to cease? It's like this, isn't that it? What else could it be? Bright stars, right? Halos, kabangs. So when we talk about attainment, it's always a sort of a... It sounds like an acid trip to me, doesn't it? When you read that, wow, man, you see what he got. So it sounds so extraordinary. Well, I'm just going to eat humble pie. And, you know, it's not. But the way we talk about it, sometimes we talk about the three fetters, sakkāya ditthi, silabhata paramasa vicikicca. Sakkāya ditthi is personality view. And personality view is when you take it personally. The washing dishes, and there's the habit of I making my making, running in the way of worry, say. Right? So what's going to happen? And my kids, and I don't know about my pension fund. And then all of a sudden, the dish breaks, and oh, well, this is the way it is now. Now, to me, if there is an understanding of the awake mind, then sakkāya ditthi has fallen away. Because you're not taking it personally, you know the way things are. It's just like this. And then sakkāya ditthi might come up again. Am I a stream enterer? Shut up. But it's like this. So maybe that's very simple. And then silabhata paramasa is a belief in rites and rituals. So oftentimes it's translated as superstition. These are called the three fetters. I think most of you have seen part of that teaching around, yeah? And so silabhata paramasa is like superstition. So if like a monk, if I think that by keeping rules I'm going to get enlightened, that's superstition. That's ridiculous, isn't it? Rule keeping. But Ajahn Sumedho takes a broader pass on it, and he says it's cultural attachment. I find that much more interesting, the kind of embedded cultural ideas of what I am, what I should be, what's right, what's wrong, coming out in all kinds of ways. So a lot of the shoulds and shouldn'ts, and masculine identity, feminine identity, Latvian identity, white identity, black identity, you know, these different kinds of ways a culture conditions us, or monks, you know, like the monk should be this or should be that. And when you see that like a cultural perception or a cultural prejudice or a cultural bias is simply that, and you don't believe in it, then it's not superstitious anymore. So let's say whenever I see someone in a religious garb, I think they're crazy. Some people look at me like that. Whenever I see someone, you know, wearing a religious outfit, especially brown, I just look at them and think, must be a fruitcake. Anyone to wear that. You know, I mean, God, I'm going to stay away from him. That's a total cultural bias. If I walk around in Thailand, a Thai person, must be enlightened. That's also a cultural bias. But both are biases. Both are kind of culturally conditioned. But if I just see, oh, that's a perception, it arises and ceases in the silence of the mind, then I'm back, then it's Dharma. It's a perception that has begun and has ended. So if I have cultural perceptions of how a brave man should be, or a monk should be, or a woman should be, and so on, I say, well, that's a perception that arises and ceases. And that which knows is what we mean Buddha. So Ajahn Sumedho would often say in the early days, he'd say, what do Buddhas know that others don't know? That which has a nature to arise, has a nature to cease, is not self. And that's the knowing of Dharma, knowing of wisdom. So Silabhata Paramasa, it can be very deep-rooted. Kind of, some things you don't even notice sometimes. But if you see a perception as a perception and just see it as an object arising and ceasing, then you're free of that one. And then vichikicca, doubt, I kind of spoke about, I think this morning, for me, that's the way I see. So doubt is a natural condition, and it's a very helpful condition. If we couldn't doubt and question things, we wouldn't be able to fix things and do things. So doubt is not wrong. But when we seek the unconditioned and the conditioned, when we seek, when we try to find security in the insecure, when we try to figure stuff out through thought that cannot be figured out through thought, we'll always be in doubt. We'll always be spinning our wheels in doubt. So the correct use of intellect. And so I oftentimes with people come to me and, you know, they think they have a problem, and then they come to me, and I inevitably say, it's not that, it's the doubt. You know, they project it onto something else. No, you know, it's the doubt. Look at the doubt. And it's very hard for people sometimes to see doubt as an object, because they just go into wanting to find a solution. So I think that Merton reading kind of addressed that. So those are the three ways we talk about what prevents what we call stream entry, entering into stream of Dharma. So once you see through that, which can be in any moment, you can also forget. You know, you can notice. Oh, that's a proliferation of thought. Yeah, it just feels this way. You can be watching your breath, and then the bell rings, and you realize, oh, I just did it for another 20 minutes. So that you can lose that, but you still understand it. You understand it, so it's part of right understanding. So from that now, okay, then I make the long-term project, say, for whatever your character is, doesn't matter. For me, it would probably be going to the Lee Valley catalog. dreaming of finishing planes. Okay, so I decide, okay, no more proliferation, Viradhammo. You're a monk. But go back to the aversion one, that's more kind of realistic. So you make that your project for a year. And that kind of, it's an interesting time frame. You have to keep reminding yourself, but then you'll see that, yeah, you begin to just have more and more mindfulness around that mood of mind. You just get better and better at it. So just keep making the wood. And as you get better at it, what you do with that becomes more and more skillful, because whatever you do with it, you'll see the result then. Right? So if you see that, you know, when that comes up, then you let's say you say to yourself, oh, there I go again. But that's not awareness. That's not awakening. That's just another form of aversion. So you see now, each iteration of annoyance or aversion, I'm going to notice that as an object, right? And you say, actually, what I do is I compound the problem with a bit more of the same. Mm. Oh, yeah, okay. And I'm never going to do it again. and that's so, okay, that's the source. Part of the source is historical, but part of the source is that I say to myself, I shouldn't do that. Oh, okay. Or I'll never do that again. Oh, I see. And there's another object. So constantly you're coming back just to the presence, stillness of knowing. And then it starts to die away because there's no fuel for it, nothing to keep it going. And then the rewards are very real. You know, there's more compassion in the heart, more stillness, and more availability to the transcendent. And you notice the trees better, right? You wash the dishes better, whatever you're doing. All of it works, so it helps. So you might just kind of consider that because you all have a lot of experience. What could you take on in your own character that might be quite interesting in some way, but also edifying and rewarding in terms of understanding your mind and moving the mind in different directions, as opposed to just kind of beating yourself up when things aren't perfect. That's different. All right. Let's stretch your legs a bit and we'll do some sitting.